We don't know what the earthquake will look like, but the best thing we can do is test a bunch of different scenarios, kind of getting at, like I said, those ranges of ground shaking that we might feel so that communities are more prepared.
From the University of Washington College of the Environment, this is Field Sound. If you're from the Pacific Northwest, you likely know about the threat of the big one. A massive earthquake that's likely to cause catastrophic destruction, and we wouldn't know exactly when it would happen, just that it could happen at any moment, and that we should be prepared. But how exactly do you prepare for an earthquake? And what exactly is an earthquake? Where do they come from? And what will it be like?
The source where it's coming from is actually slip on a fault. So a fault is just a kind of a break in the crust of the earth, a place where there's two, you know, absolutely gargantuan scale bodies of the earth's crust, rock, that are pressed up against each other, and the plates are trying to move.
Harold Tobin is a UW professor in the Department of Earth and Space Sciences. His research involves the study of tectonic plate boundaries, with a focus on how faults work and the conditions inside them that lead to earthquakes. He's especially interested in subduction zones, where the planet's largest earthquakes and tsunamis take place. Tobin is the designated Washington State seismologist.
And I'm also the director of something called the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network, which is the research center that basically runs all the seismometers we have in Washington and Oregon. So if you hear about an earthquake happened and, you know, the magnitude and when and where, that's us. But these massive scale plates, the Pacific Ocean floor, which is called the Juan de Fuca plate, and then the North American plate are sort of trying to you know, converge on each other. And the plates are trying to move and they stick and they go at an incredibly slow rate on a human time scale, like a few inches a year. But over hundreds of years, that you know, that builds up a strain, just in the same way that if you pull the string back on a bow, you're bending the bow, right? And eventually, the strain is so much that it's going to release, and that plate slides over the other plate, and that sliding sends out all those waves and those ripples that we feel as the earthquake. So the larger the area over which that happens, and the more it slips, the bigger the earthquake.
When we talk about earthquakes, we talk about magnitude or the size of the earthquake. How are earthquakes measured?
It's like everybody hears, oh, it's a magnitude 8, it's a magnitude 9, it's a magnitude 4.2, whatever. That's a scale of basically how large the earthquake slip was and also how strong the waves were that came out from the earthquake. It's a scale that's logarithmic, so it's really important to recognize that they get so much bigger. You know, a magnitude 9 is the equivalent of 30 magnitude 8s, and an 8 is the equivalent of 37. So a 9 is 900 times bigger than a magnitude 7. And you know, you can multiply it by 30 again, 18,000 times bigger than a magnitude 6. So when we talk about an earthquake of a 3 or a 4 or a 5, those are big enough for people to feel, but they are really nothing remotely like what these very large earthquakes are like.
And what about intensity or how the earthquake is felt?
What you feel depends on how far away you are and the kind of ground you're standing on and whether you're in a tall building or a low building and all kinds of things like that. So we call that the earthquake's intensity. So the intensity varies with your location. You could feel a very strong intensity if you're close to the earthquake and nothing at all, or a very low intensity far away. The analogy I like is that the earthquake magnitude is like the wattage of the light bulb, of a light bulb. So, you know, it just has a wattage. It's putting out a certain amount of light. How bright it is where you are, that's the intensity of the light bulb. If you're far away, you barely see it, right? You barely see the light from it. So that's the distinction. So anyway, so we tend to talk about earthquakes and their magnitude because that's a common thing for anyone who, you know, who is in the area that experiences it. It describes that earthquake.
Washington State is earthquake country. Growing up in this region, we practiced earthquake drills in school. Drop, cover, and hold. Yet there are many here in the Northwest that have never experienced an earthquake. The last big earthquake in this area was in 2001, a 6.8 earthquake that caused destruction in the Puget Sound region and lasted nearly a minute. The big one will likely feel different.
In the Northwest, you know, we have earthquakes from time to time. So we tend to go a long time between earthquakes that people really feel here in our region, which creates some complacency, but really, you know, that doesn't mean they're not potentially going to come in the future. In fact, we know they will. And that's a challenge. There's really more than one type of large earthquake that could happen, but everybody talks about, you know, the potential for the big one, right? And what we mean by that in the Northwest is one of these offshore earthquakes, mostly offshore, that is where the two plates meet and one slides beneath the other, a so-called subduction zone. And in the Cascadia subduction zone, we know now through an incredible amount of sort of geological sleuthing and kind of inference, that place has the possibility of a magnitude 9 scale earthquake. And these are the largest earthquakes that the planet has. There have actually only been 5 magnitude 9s since we started having seismometers well over 100 years ago on the whole planet. So what does that mean? What is the big one? In our case, it's the potential for an earthquake where the actual fault lies at the coast or just offshore of Washington, Oregon, Vancouver Island, even Northern California. But that doesn't mean it's not going to shake us here inland in a place like the Puget Sound. Those earthquakes are so big that the shaking could be very strong and go on for not seconds, but several minutes long. The break of the fault happens so suddenly, it spreads over the fault in a matter of seconds or, you know, less than a minute or so. And so all we have is the ability to detect that earthquake as it's getting started, but not really to show it in advance.
There's a lot of unknowns in seismology, and I think the particular one that's been stumping seismologists since the field started is how we can predict earthquakes.
Audrey Dunham is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Washington focused on quantifying seismic hazards using large-scale ground motion simulations of potential Cascadia subduction zone earthquakes.
For my postdoc research, I'll be simulating the ground motion from different scenarios of large Cascadia subduction zone earthquakes. And that's basically so that we can get a understanding of the kind of ranges of ground shaking that our population centers, our communities in the Pacific Northwest might feel from these earthquakes. So we don't know what the earthquake will look like, but the best kind of thing we can do is test a bunch of different scenarios, kind of getting at, like I said, those ranges of ground shaking that we might feel so that communities are more prepared.
What data do scientists use? What do these models consist of, and what can they tell us? How do they work?
For an earthquake, are where the actual epicenter of the earthquake is located, how much slip or how much motion is along that fault, and then how fast it's going. So we put all of those kind of things into our model. We also need to know about the earth structure, which is basically how fast these waves are traveling through the rock where the earthquake is happening. And these are important because they either increase the ground shaking or decrease it in different ways. And we put these into a numerical model where we basically use supercomputers to calculate how those waves are traveling in 3D. And then we pick at each location on the surface where we want that information. The output of our simulations or our models are actually seismograms at the surface.
Researchers create models that essentially lay out potential scenarios of what a Cascadia earthquake might look like.
And with that, we'll be doing coupled tsunami simulations. So we'll have these earthquake and we'll simulate the ground shaking that the earth will feel. And we'll also simulate a tsunami that could happen from that.
The coast of our state is likely to experience a tsunami of the scale of some of the biggest ones we've ever seen, like what happened in the Indian Ocean in 2004 or Japan in 2011, a little more than a decade ago. And so preparing for that is really important. Fortunately, we don't have really big cities on the outer Pacific coast, but we do have plenty of people who are living there or vacation there. And the shaking, you know, is potentially a hazard, but maybe even more of the hazard is just knowing that you have to get away from the potential tsunami inundation zone. And if you feel strong shaking at the coast, you want to, you know, be secure during the earthquake, drop cover and hold on. But as soon as the shaking is over, look at whether you need to move to higher ground. It's really important that people know that, so that, like happened in Japan, you know, most people can actually escape and save their lives.
I think there's been some really important progress on the coast recently, including the building of vertical evacuation structures. Some communities are in locations where it's just not feasible by foot to get to higher ground out of a region of a tsunami. So they build these structures that are high enough to get people into safety without actually having to like run to higher ground. So they can just walk up these structures and kind of stand. They really improved the hazard models in the regions because they built this vertical evacuation structure.
Audrey is also applying her expertise as postdoctoral researcher with the Cascadia COPES Hub. Her work with large-scale simulations can help improve our understanding of geologic hazards for coastal communities and positively impact earthquake and tsunami preparedness measures for communities on the coast.
The COPES Hub, or the Cascadia Coastlines and People's Hazards Hub, it's a group of researchers that have a main goal of increasing resilience of coastal communities to things like natural hazards as well as climate change. COPUB, I think, will really help to work with people who are already kind of doing these things. And I'm on the team that focuses on the geologic hazards, but there's also teams looking at how this impacts the communities and how we can increase their resilience using kind of our new models that we'll be producing.
The recent tragic earthquakes impacting Turkey and Syria serve as an example of how unpredictable and devastating earthquakes can be, and also why it's important to prepare. Earthquake experts like Harold Tobin and Audrey Dunham offer a few words of advice to remind us that when we prepare, we improve our chances to mitigate loss, and we're more likely to make it through a big earthquake just fine.
Most people come through fine from even big earthquakes. And that will be true here as well. Most people don't realize that that normal wood frame houses, like single family sized houses, one or two, three story buildings, are pretty safe buildings to be in for the most part in earthquakes. They're not likely to collapse in any of these events, except the ones that are shaken the absolute hardest. And that's a small percentage of the total. The Japan tsunami is another example. Where it was a terrible disaster. 19,000 people lost their lives in that tsunami. But something like 350,000 are known to have been in the tsunami sort of fatal zone at the time of the earthquake. So between the earthquake and when the tsunami washed ashore, almost 95% of the people got out of that zone and were safe. And it's terrible that people lost their lives. And of course, we need to do better. But again, it's just a reminder that these disasters are not so all-encompassing that we should just throw up our hands and not prepare.
In an earthquake, every second counts, and preparedness is key. Shake Alert is another tool that can potentially protect lives from the destruction of earthquakes by notifying people just seconds after an earthquake begins via mobile apps, emergency alerts on cell phones, and public address systems in buildings.
In the past, 5-7 years or so, we've really built up and actually doubled our capacity in the region because of this new earthquake early warning program, which is a way to, you know, detect earthquakes as they begin and give people sort of 10, 20, 30 seconds or more of warning before the shaking actually starts. It's a whole new game. If you feel shaking, or if you get one of these shake alert messages that comes in on your phone, then, you know, move away from anything that looks like an object that could really topple on you, but drop cover and hold on. Get under the table, get under something sturdy, because most injuries actually come not from the building collapsing, but from objects falling, you know, within a room or a space like that. And then secondly, you know how to be prepared for the disruption in the aftermath. So have your go bag that has some food and flashlight, and, you know your communication system. Maybe have a family plan to know, you know, where you'll meet up if the cell phones aren't working and you're in different places after the event. Something like that is worth worth at least talking about once a year, just being aware of. You can go for all kinds of information on what should be in your so-called 2 weeks ready bag, or, you know, sort of go kit. The Washington State Emergency Management Department, Washington EMD, has a great website, and they have all kinds of information on earthquake preparedness there. Great place to go. There are also links at our website, which is PNSN, like Pacific Northwest Seismic Network, .org. That's PNSN.org, which we have all kinds of earthquake information there, and a map of what's happening right now or in the last week or 2 weeks in our region.
All right. So be prepared.
Absolutely. Prepare, not despair. That's my motto on earthquakes.
Oh, that's a good one. And it rhymes.
Yeah. Exactly.
A thank you to our guests, Harold Tobin and Audrey Dunham. To learn more about Harold and Audrey's work, PNSN, and the Cascadia COPES Hub, visit our website at environment.uw.edu or click the links in this episode description. From all of us at Field Sound, thanks for listening.